smoking. I'm on a 40. I'm smoking on a 40, so to speak.
Yeah. Okay. Have anybody selected an order of chicken out of this room? No, I don't think he cares about my opinion.
How are you, Senator?
I'm fantastic. How are you doing?
Good. She remembers when I was chairman and pregnant.
How are you?
I'm very empowered. I'm also pregnant. I'm out here in public service.
Put out about kindergarten. Had a price set. $1,600.
All right, we'll go ahead and get started. And I want to welcome everybody to our legislative delegation luncheon for today, and particularly welcome our delegation. And we certainly are grateful for all your efforts and what you do on behalf of our citizens here in Loudoun County. I'm going to kind of skip all the introductions today, as I've got a lot of us that need to get back to work and other things in life. But I do want to take this opportunity to introduce to you our new county attorney, Leo Rogers, who has come to us from James City County. He had his first full meeting with us last night and regrets coming to Loudoun County. we certainly welcome him. What I'm going to do is go ahead and turn the time over to John Sandy, who is going to take us through the program and the rest of our agenda and give a briefing on the board's legislative package. But again, let me reiterate, we are certainly grateful for your support. I think the last 2 years we've been fairly successful in getting some of the things that we need to get done with your help down in Richmond, and it's greatly appreciated. So with that, I'm going to turn the mic over to Mr. Sandy.
Thank you, Chairman York, and I also want to echo the Chairman's comments. Thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedules to be here today to listen to us, to go through the board's program. Many of these issues you've seen are reoccurring issues, but we're going to try to highlight some new priorities that the board has discussed and feels strongly about for this year's session. The good news is there is a short session this year, but we certainly think a lot can be accomplished. And we appreciate all of your help throughout these years with everything you've done in supporting the board's program. So I'm going to try to run through a number of slides very quickly. We're going to talk a little bit about the priority statements of the board. Those are the overarching priorities. We'll talk a little bit, give you a quick high volume rural roads update and a use of cash coffers for transportation update. We'll also talk about the priority initiatives or those initiatives where the board is actually requesting legislation or a study. And then we'll hit some new policy positions, things that you may have read about, may have not heard. And then we'll hopefully get back with a chance for you to provide some remarks. So with that, again, the number one priority of the Board of Supervisors is transportation. Certainly appreciates the state's efforts with 2313 providing new funding for transportation. The board continues to support that effort and has obviously identified a number of priorities and projects. Many of those are really moving forward. The first first page of your program, you'll see a listing of those different projects. And we certainly have maps that we can hand out to you that will have those, that you, there'll be takeaways where you'll see where the board has put its priority efforts toward in cooperation with the state. What I'm going to do right now quickly is, I know that there's some delegation members that want to hear a little bit about the high volume roads. And Terry Laycock is going to talk really briefly about that. And then she's also going to talk to you about how staff has made a concerted effort in drawing down our cash profits for transportation. We've made a lot of great efforts this year.
Hey John, excuse me for a second. Mr. Chair, should we pull questions or dialogue, or how do you want this?
No, I think where you have questions, go ahead and chime in.
If I could just ask one clarifying comment. On this particular first sentence, are we suggesting that the board and the county are supporting the work that we just completed in 2313, or are you asking us to go forward and support further increases in state transportation? I just want a little bit of clarity on that first
sentence. It's supporting what you have done on 2313.
That's easier than us going back.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah. And certainly with the budget situation. I think the board understands it. So, Terry?
Yes, over the last year, we've worked with several of the members of our state delegates, delegation and our members of the Board of Supervisors that represent the rural end of Loudoun County with respect to our high volume unpaved roads.
Terry,
get the mic.
Hey, Terry.
As you know, we had planned and had programmed based on some numbers we had gotten from VDOT, significant amounts of money for paving unpaved roads. And based on some legislation that went through, that money kind of disappeared. But anyway, we found a way to move on with VDOT. They reported to the Commonwealth Transportation Board in May that there would be $700,000 available statewide for a new high-volume unpaved road program. Loudoun County applied for the maximum that we are able to, $300,000 for Bull Red Post Office Road. In November, VDOT staff indicated that for FY15, the statewide amount had dropped from $700,000 to $212,000 statewide for this program. The CTB in November approved two projects, one for Loudoun County and one for Warren County. So we will each be granted $106,000 for our projects, ours being Bull Run Post Office Road. One of the things I did when I found that there was going to be that little bit of a deficit is we went back and there was a subdivision approved a number of years ago where we did get some cash funding to improve Bull Run Post Office Road. So I'll be coming back to the board with a recommendation to use some of the subdivision money, just under $200,000, to make up for that change so we can move forward with getting that road paved. So anyway, that's kind of the downwards. But on the good side is now that, and I knew Delegate Minshew was going to be asking about this, I'm only speaking to road proffers, cash proffers that we've collected in the bank for both non-rezoning, so that's our subdivision money, and any cash proffers that we've collected through rezonings over the years. We have about $39.8 million in the bank. This year alone, because we are so big now into road building in Loudoun County, given that the board has put 2 cents on the tax rate, that we have some funds coming in from 2313,
Clarification, we did not put 2 cents on the tax rate. We're using 2 cents of the tax rate.
Okay. We did go through and scour for all the projects that the proper funds that we might be able to use, and I'm happy to report in 2015, the staff and has proposed and the board has approved the use of $6.6 million, so that's already been budgeted, and we are programming for FY16 in the CIP another $9.8 million, so about $16.4 million of the $39 million in 1 year will be used on road projects. So I That's... Are you happy?
Well, my Mr. Chairman, 39 million of the collective coffers drawing 0.05% of treasurer's earnings, but there's about 110 million total, right?
I can't answer that because I don't deal with the other cash coffers. I just deal with the coffers, so I don't
know. You're about in the right figure.
So we're about 90. The math is right. About 70% of that cash crop money, is it schools? Is it general services, capital projects?
Across a lot of different categories. You know, when Charles Shedden, County Administrator, when the commitments come in the form of an approved rezoning, we might have a capital facilities contribution. That is the next broadest category. Would allow us to use it for other CIP projects, general government, libraries, that type of thing, schools. We also have had some contributions that are very specific categories, like open space easements. So it depends. We can get you that information if you want. We have a quarterly report for our board, and it gives a whole accounting by type.
Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you.
Thank you. So as you realize, transportation is still a priority for the board, trying to accomplish that with the funds that the General Assembly has provided so graciously. The other priority statements really has not changed, really supporting maintaining the existing statutory authority in the land use arena, preventing any kind of erosion of that authority. The same thing with taxing authority, supporting keeping its existing taxing authority, allowing that to be a local decision, a local governing body decision on its own taxes. And then in terms of state funding, making sure that the state lives up to its commitments in public education, public safety, health and human services. And of course, the county for years has opposed state-imposed mandates that are not funded adequately by the state, and has supported the Mandates Commission in their work that has been done in Richmond. Next slide. These are the priority initiatives. These are the ones that are either requesting legislation or studies for the 2015 session. You'll recognize the first one dealing with A&E contracts. I know that there was a change to raise those levels last year. The staff is working with the board, is still trying to raise those levels per project and per annual term. You can see the limits from $2 million to $2.5 million and $5 million to $10 million. These are task order contracts, and we're really talking about a lot of design work that is being done, a lot of engineering study work that is being done on transportation projects. So it really falls and syncs up with the board's transportation program. Try to get those projects done quicker so they can use the resources that you have provided in Richmond for them. Then the other new piece of that is job order contracts. These are contracts, small contracts that really relate to doing work for stormwater management systems, HVAC work. They can also deal with certain transportation improvements, spot improvements, and the board is trying to seek a small increase from $400,000 per project to $500,000 per project and $2 million per year to $4 million per year. Next slide. The board also has talked at length about a couple taxes that, a couple programs that were put in place a number of years ago, and the inability of those programs and the local allocations from those programs of keeping up with the growth in the county, not reflecting the growth in our economy, the growth in our job sector, or also just in terms of being those local allocations being set in stone from those many years. The one tax certainly is the Personal Property Tax Relief Act, which of course was an attempt to reduce the burden to 70% and has now become a local reimbursement program. The overall pie is set at $950 million statewide. Our number is right around $48 million. Fairfax's is right around $211 million. Our rate, even though it's lower, if you equated Fairfax's rate with our rate, they still are going to have a greater share of the pie in terms of what less of a burden than our taxpayers. And so there's concerns about that. There's concerns that it has not been looked at since 2006. Those levels haven't been looked at in terms of the mix. But I certainly would say that the board would appreciate support to keep the program in place. And I know they want you to know that. They're not recommending that the program be eliminated. It is a local program that the board supports. But they certainly feel that a study's in order just to look at how the allocations were kind of set in a revenue neutral position so many years ago. On the communications sales and use tax, again, that was a group of taxes that were local taxes that the telecommunications industry had concerns about, a lot of concerns about, because they were well over 90 different rates potentially across localities. Those were bundled into a 5% sales tax and a, I think it's 25 cents on accounts for cell phones and for landlines. And of course, over time, again, that was a revenue neutral solution for 1 year in time, and the pace of the economy has changed. Landlines are starting to go away. Cell phones and cell phone services are starting to expand. A lot more digital services, texting services, et cetera, and through new technologies. So the board feels, again, that it'd be good to have the delegation support introducing some resolution, a study, or having the Department of Tax look at both of those issues for a study. The next issue really has to do with the review of the commission permits. Again, by commission permits, we're looking at planning commission reviews over public facilities, approvals such as utilities, roads, parks. Right now, set in statute, that permit review period is about 60 days. There have been concerns with recent applications that the board has had to entertain that really condenses the time that they have to review things based on what they have in their local ordinance. So they feel to reduce, in order to eliminate the ambiguity, there should be legislation to potentially establish a 90-day period for the Board of Supervisors to review those permits.
Let me just chime in here. Senator Black is aware of this. We had what I would say is a very controversial application that was before us regarding the commission permit. And due to timing, we absolutely had no time really to discuss it when it came out of the Planning Commission and into the Board of Supervisors for action. We would feel that if we could get another 30 days, this would help void the conflict that we had. You know, most of our commission permits are no-brainers, but occasionally you get those that are very controversial, and it just, in this situation, was not really a help to the board when we went to the public hearing on the commission permit to make the decision either to ratify or to deny it, that we had to make the decision the night of the public hearing, and we're not able to at least carry it over to the next business meeting in order for further thought and discussion and review of the application.
And last but not least, full restoration of the cost of competing funding. I know Delegate Greeson and others have, you all have supported efforts in the past. You've signed on to Northern Virginia regional efforts to try to get full restoration of cost of competing. As you know, on average, our cost of living is about 25% higher than aggregate than the rest of the state. And of course, we're talking about a lot of the support functions that have been zeroed out in the biennial budget. So that's a big issue for the county. It's a big issue for Northern Virginia. And the locality, Northern Virginia, has pretty much been in lockstep in trying to support restoration. Next slide, again, the split election precinct technical changes. I realize that General Assembly did do its work last year, put something out, the governor vetoed that effort. Again, we just wanted to make you aware of that. With the split precincts, there is a cost to that. There's a cost of almost $2,000 for poll workers to deal with those kind of issues. And it doubles during presidential elections. So you can see, for instance, in one of the precincts at Cool Spring, there's only two voters that are impacted. At Briarwoods precinct, there's 113 impacted. So we have some precincts with very few people showing up, demand staff, it's costly, and anything that you could do to help with that, the board certainly would appreciate it.
John?
Yes, sir.
On that issue, I carry every year a split precinct bill as a metric, and it's had some controversy, but my concern is that the era of the intended corrections may have come and gone. I think our governor and our attorney general are the belief that once you set in precincts, you can't change them again until you get to a year that ends with one under the Constitution. I don't believe that, but I think the Attorney General does. And that's one reason why you have no correction bills to go through, since it'll be different done. And regrettably, well, I'd be glad to carry the bill and do it for Park County also. My gut is it'll be the same fate in respect of being.
Well, that's unfortunate. I'm right, but we certainly wanted to bring it to your attention. It's still an issue for us, and it's maybe something that we would also can work with the Attorney General's office in looking at that. So.
Yeah, and given, Governor Mitchell, you're right, given that this past session, the governor, the one that got through, Senator Vogel carried, and passed both chambers was vetoed. So yeah, I don't know how the governor could backtrack from that. I just don't know if it's possible, so you're right. I don't think we're real optimistic and we wouldn't necessarily ask you to spend all your energies on this because you've already tried and given the posture of this administration, I don't know that we can get it done. But it is an issue and it still is an issue. And it's unfortunate that mindset has changed because historically this was a bill that would have passed and been signed. So. You know, voters are the ones paying the price for this, not just the county taxpayers, but voters that show up out of confusion at the wrong precinct. And it's happening.
I didn't worry considering having a Democrat as a chief co-patron because it's not a partisan issue. It's really, it's a mechanical thing of making whichever precinct function. So. And I can, you know, I think, you know, you have legislation that comes from the Democrats or from the Republicans that deals with, okay, we're gonna redraw some lines a little bit here and there. You know, it naturally inspires a little bit of nervousness. On the other side, that there might be, you know, just a thought. And you know more about it than I do.
The next issues are just new policy positions, not looking for a legislation or a study. So I'm going to run through these pretty quickly. The Board of Supervisors last night had agreed to push for replenishment of the Governor's Development Opportunity Fund. That fund is, its balance is typically about $11.8 million. In years past, it was higher than that. There's concern that it may be overcommitted. There may be more opportunities out there, but not as much money. The board's concerned about that. Certainly, it would help with future economic development here, help keep our engine strong, and support some of the efforts that the board is looking at. So that's something that they would support. Also, the implementation of medical service schedule for workers' compensation claims. Virginia is one of six states that does not have a schedule for workers' compensation claims. This is something that impacts the county dramatically. It's something that from 2011 to 2013 cost us around $7.5 million. It's a big issue for us. Putting in a schedule provides the opportunity and surety of what our costs are going to be. That way they will not float based on whatever medical providers wish to charge. So again, that's a big issue for us. And Delegate Hugo had a bill last year that's been continued into this session that we wanted to point out to you on that. Next slide. The board also looked at this tax credit for accessible units, partly because of the graying in Virginia. By 2025, about 25% of Virginia will be an elderly population or senior population. It's a small credit, about $5,000, that's provided income tax credit for a new or purchase of a new home to make it accessible for elderly or for anybody with disabilities. We're up to 50% for a retrofit of their income, the cost of that amount. What this is looking at is just changing the budget balances to allow more of the money for more people to qualify under the credit. So you can see what the levels are. If there's legislation, the board's going to support that. The next issue is stormwater management permits fee. The county now is in the business of doing this work and is predominantly administering the program for stormwater management within the county. But the state is still taking 28% of the permit fee. We feel that that's out of whack. Our county has a considerable amount of work that's entailed in pulling off that work through our environmental health group. And the county believes that that proportionality should be retrofitted for the work that we actually have to accomplish. The board also took a position because of the concerns during the summer, of DMV being potentially deregulating some of the rideshare programs like Uber and Lyft and Sidecar. There was some concern that DMV would propose a bill that might eliminate our regulatory authority to regulate existing traditional taxicab services and operators. And the board certainly does not support that. I don't think that effort's going to happen. But they took a position to maintain local authority to regulate taxicab services. With the onset of Metro and the onset of the additional traditional cabs that will be in the county, trying to do those connections to people in their neighborhoods to get them to Metro, they believe that they should maintain their authority. They're going to be looking at an ordinance in the upcoming months to potentially do this regulatory framework for taxi cabs. So they want to maintain that authority. And then the last issue, there's still a couple more, but this one has to do with public school fund balances. There have been a few years where the Board of Supervisors has been able to take some of the fund balance that has been available for the schools at the end of the year for necessity, but also because they were concerned about the levels of those amounts. And right now, under current law, those balances can be pulled by the governing body because they're appropriated by the governing body. They can be pulled back. The board wants to make sure that it maintains its authority and that does not change. And so that's that position. And then we have another position related to Robbie's work. Again, that is a bill that was carried by Delegate Ramadan last year to set up a supplemental registry for offenders that ordinarily would be under the sexual offender registry, but their offense predated the time that that registry was created, and Delegate Ramadan has been working to get the state to develop a supplemental registry. There's a large number of offenders that are not shown up because their offense predated that, and the board wants to support that effort in his legislation.
Since I'm your subject, I'm just giving you a quick update. I find the bills HB 13 and 15 agreed for this year. We think we have reached a meeting of minds with the state police. This was derailed last year because the state police put on a $1.2 million price tag, which doesn't cost $1.2 million. We came to a $50,000 price tag, and even today, how they're going to set it up. It looks like we got agreement on it. And when I filed, it's identical to last year. It will be changed to what we agreed with the state police on. And just for terminology, it's not a registry, it's a listing. We're not going to, the law doesn't allow us to require people prior to the registry law to go register. We're just going to put the listing somewhere as a sub to the registry so people can go look up. This, I mean, this sex offender is still a sex offender. He's not registered now because he predates the law, but constituents would be able to go find where that sex offender, or the name of that sex offender, not necessarily where he lives, because he's not registered. Yes. And Senator Wexler is also working on that because the constituent is our mutual constituent.
And I'll be carrying a Senate version of this bill, which is, I have already made changes to it, to the version that Delegate Ramadan carried last year. And we'll talk about what the state police have wanted in it. I mean, it will not be as in depth as the actual as the registry, but it will at least give people something to go on.
And I appreciate the support on this. Constituent Valerie Reason just informed me that this is circulating across communities, very interested in it. This has happened through a coach, a baseball coach, at schools, who was continuing to coach kids, and then did it twice again after the first offense.
Great.
So that's all we have in terms of the positions and the new legislation and studies.
Well, let me add, I think one more concern, and we as a board have not, get rid of that. We as a board have not really discussed this particular issue, but I know it will be problematic for us, and there seems to be some discussion about repealing reimbursements for the car tax going on. And quite frankly, if that happens, it puts the board kind of in a dicey position. Obviously, if that does, the bill to our constituents will go up. Well, you say that, but it's a major discussion with the way the budget is down there. And I want to make it very clear that if it does happen, the board will be put in, I think right off the bat, in a position where we cannot even make the choice of just getting rid of the car tax to reduce the burden on the car owner because of the timing of the situation. But obviously, and I'll be very blunt about this, if action is taken by the state to do this, we're going to get blamed for increasing everybody's taxes. And that's just not going to be acceptable. And I hope that if there is major discussion about doing this, I think most of the localities will be very upset.
On that point, I think it's a great point, and like we did with some of the other things in the past couple of years, a letter from the chairman and the board to the governor directly, I think would be appropriate. I think you're talking to most of the people, and the choir here is nodding their head along with you. But I think the governor and the administration should hear that directly from the chairman and the board. That's your position, which I expect it is.
Okay.
You might have some of the legislators who would be happy to sign on to a letter along with the board on that.
I appreciate the sentiment. So we will take care of that as soon as I have a chance to talk to my colleagues on this and take a position at our first meeting in January.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask a question about
sure.
one of the pieces of legislation, John, that you presented on the authority of translating tax caps, and the two bullets on the one page or down below are the ones that caught my eye, which basically are asterisks. Drivers who fail background checks are routinely sent to Loudoun County to operate. And number two, vehicles that are too old or inefficient to be in service get sent to Loudoun County.
Yep.
Is that because of the above statement that says to date Loudoun does not have an ordinance around taxi cabs? And then to also be blunt, what are we waiting for? Because I don't want to have people who fail background checks and people who are driving unsafe cars hang around in Loudoun. And I am a big supporter of Uber and Lyft and that free market. And I'm going to be involved in that discussion, so I want to be, make sure I'm in line with what you guys are doing or not doing on that issue.
Well, first of all, it's not a legislative ask. It's not, we're not asking for a bill or legislation on that. We're just asking to basically protect the board's authority to do that. Staff is working on a draft ordinance, and it will be getting to the board, we hope, this year or early next year, to start working through those kind of issues to do that kind of regulation, because that's not only are those two issues on the fact sheet presented, but there's also issues with having cabs that are accessible for those. Some cab companies that work outside the county will not send their accessible cabs into the county. So it's a whole host of issues. I know staff is working through that. Made it one of their priorities during their transportation summit, and they've directed us to begin work on that.
Perhaps by way of background under transportation, I'm certain most of you are aware of this, but because of cooperation with the state, as well as MWA and developer proffers, we will have several projects under construction next year, including the interchange at Ashburn Village Boulevard and Route 7, the interchange at Route 7 and 659, the Gloucester Boulevard connection from Noakes interchange on Route 28 to Loudoun County Parkway, and perhaps the biggest project for us is 606 widening. So the good news is we'll have a lot under construction next year. The bad news is we'll have a lot under construction next year. And most of this is without the MBTA funding coming to us. I think most of the MBTA monies start hitting in the following year and projects that will begin on the ground. But I would be curious, from the perspective of the delegation, one of the discussions we are having at NBTA now is with respect to the 70%. We have, in our six-year CIP program, calculated a lot of our funding for our projects based on receiving that 70% as well into Loudoun County. The authority's discussion is, well, we believe the assembly's definition is basically the 70% means funding for a project that may impact a jurisdiction, but not necessarily constructed in that jurisdiction. In other words, a project could be built in Fairfax to help provide relief for commuters in Loudoun County, and Loudoun's 70% is calculated into the project in Fairfax County. If we go that route, that will obviously have, I think, a pretty big impact on the county CIP, where we anticipate construction funds for projects in the out years, probably years four and on of the, or excuse me, three and on of the CIP. So Mr. Minch, you may be aware of this now that he's a member of MBTA, and I'm just curious, any thoughts from the delegation on this?
Thank you. My first thought would be that
dare to allow for sure, not just on the fact that impact or anybody west of any east county. So every western county to neighboring eastern county would make the hit on that. And I don't think that was the intent of any part of the discussion. So, yeah, that's how it goes.
Well, I believe the intent of the legislation, which I had something to do with, was that the 70% would be used for regional projects that helped everybody. It didn't mean 70% went to Loudoun, 70% went to Fairfax, and so forth. There was some concern with that. So the legislation also includes that over an unspecified period of time, that every jurisdiction will get their fair share of the money that they put into the taxes that we were paying additionally here in Northern Virginia. So it is, as a member of NVTA and as a person who helped write the bill, I think that the intent of the legislature was that it not be 70% for each individual jurisdiction, but it be for regional projects that helped everybody. And that may very well mean a major project in Fairfax County, of which, and I'm making this up, 40% of the traffic is coming out of Loudoun County. And you're on NVTA.
No, and I appreciate that. But it's very, on the other hand, it's very concerning, because if we're spending the money on large projects, the unspecified time of actually getting the 70% spent in your community could be 100 years out. And the challenge that we have is that the traffic is not just coming from Loudoun County. It's coming from West Virginia. It's coming Absolutely. From Pennsylvania. Absolutely. And we're getting nothing credited for that. Whereas Fairfax, you know, they can take all that traffic and just put it on top and say, well, that's Loudoun County. So it's something that I think that maybe over a few years may come to a head, because I don't see, and I can see some major projects, and not that they're not worthy, such as the improvements of Route 28 around 66 and on into Manassas. Huge money, and how and what kind of time over that period of time do I ever see, or does Loudoun County see 70% actually spent in Loudoun? And so it's kind of something we've got to keep track of and make sure it is fair in the long run.
Well, Mr. Chairman, as you know, there is a technical advisory committee made up of representatives of all the jurisdictions who are in the NVTA working on that very issue. And I will be very candid with you. I'm not on the commission, but I go sit in it, because ultimately the NVTA is going to make a decision about the process, and they are struggling with that very issue.
Yeah.
And I don't deny at all that Loudoun gets a lot of traffic from outside of Loudoun, just like Prince William gets a lot of traffic from outside of Prince William and coming from Stafford. We'll work through it. You and I may not see it, Scott.
For what it's worth, it would almost seem to make better sense that the money would go to those counties, and then they would have some, you know, through coordination with the counties. I know, for example, there was a project of major importance down in South Ryan that actually was over the border in Fairfax County, and the county government stepped in and put funds in it, even though it was not located in Loudoun County. I think that local governments would have to be responsible with their allocation of funds, and I think they will. They will look. They look at it regionally. We look at it. I know our county looks at it very regionally. But if there is some dominant county like Fairfax County that sort of controls the funds for everybody, then there's always going to be a bias towards saying, okay, we're going to take care of Fairfax County and these other guys can take care of themselves. So you almost need advocates and you need the local governments to be able to advocate for their proper share of what's going on. So I think it's better to have the localities have the initial control and then coordinate with adjacent counties on projects of mutual benefit.
Chairman, as you know, the resident serving in the EPA, this issue about finding long-term benefits is something that the UK staff is working on. You don't think it didn't give a definition of what is long-term benefits. One reason why Lachlan, our executive director, and meeting with all members to get their feelings on what that should be. My suspicion is going to be that my definition of long-term benefits is going to be different from Senator Abinett representing the intercepters. And I think we'll give the EPA time to work through that and work up some kind of a qualitative definition of what that is. I don't think that the EPA would want the General Assembly to give a definitional approach to that in the statutory language. But I think it's a priority when I hear from the EPA staff and the chairman, and I anticipate we'll see some rule of reason, some qualitative definition of what is the wrong benefit to use for that 70%.
So is your advice that in our CIP we should not bother using or calculating 70% at all, using 70% funds?
What I've seen, you might come in the EPA, I'm not sure I can do that.
Okay.
It's not a bankable commodity, but we will get 70%. For instance, down in Hampton Roads, where they need tunnels, they're putting their segments of money toward these true regional tunnels. They can do it down there, so that's what they have to do. We don't have that restriction up here, but my bet is that you would assume 70% is going to come back to Loudoun County. That may not be as conservative as you want to be.
Okay. Any questions by my colleagues?
I just want to make sure everybody's clear about the car tax relief. Because I got a cold, so I'm kind of tight. I don't know if you want me talking on this thing, but okay. I just want to make sure that everybody's clear on the car tax relief issue, because I'm not sure that it was explained the way the board looks at it. What happened originally, as you know, way back in Governor Gilmore's day, was where we got the 60% tax relief. And then several years ago, the General Assembly, rather than pay the localities that 60%, you capped it at $950 million. But what's happened is, for growing localities, we get more cars. So the base of cars goes up, but the dollars we get are constant. They're not based on those additional cars. So if you look at Clark County right now, the tax relief that their residents are getting is about 60%. They're back to the original 10 of the law several years ago. In Loudoun County right now, the Board of Supervisors has to keep raising that if we want to keep neutral on the revenues. And our tax relief for our citizens sits at about 47% right now. And that is the issue in a nutshell, is that as we get more cars, our share doesn't follow those cars. Therefore, we have to raise it in order to keep revenues neutral. So growing the jurisdictions are getting penalized by the current approach. So I just want to make sure we kind of laid out clearly what that issue was.
I've been working with John and Matt on this route.
Yeah.
We got to wait on how we're going to put the study down. The result is going to be how's it going to affect other counties? And
oh, right.
Got more votes to pull it through.
Agreed.
Honestly, or that.
Yep.
But we'll get a study going this year to come up with what the numbers should be, and then the fight will be next year to figure out can we pull it through or not.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Any other questions? Any thoughts? Yes, Rand.
I know the board probably focused on them, but since Loudoun County joined the WMATA compact, the county will be carrying 4.8% of the operational cost of the entire WMATA system. And the cost of that impending load that's going to be hitting our county, I would encourage the county to be involved with what WMATA starts working on with respect to their pending, what they call it, Loudoun might be easily forgotten by inner suburbs. We're working on that for metro aficionados. But because that 4.8% is going to be a big nut, we most certainly should have a seat at the table in determining what WMATA does with respect to this metro plan.
Yeah, staff is working on it very closely and keeping the board advised. So thank you for bringing that up.
It's also the capital cost, not just the operating.
Yeah. So. All right. Well, I want to thank everybody for coming today. We look forward to continuing to work with you into the legislative session next year. And please don't hesitate to call us and let us know what we can do to help out as well. And at some point, we'll probably come down and have a dinner with you one evening next month, if that's allowed under the ethics rules to do that.
Make it a cheap dinner. We'll get to the point where, you know, if you almost give somebody a handkerchief or a Kleenex to blow their nose, you're gonna go to jail. So
Would McDonald's
we'll
burger
work? From the dollar menu.
On the dollar menu. All right. Thank you, everyone, for coming. That's what I need.
You got the water.
No, Tom. I'm talking about one that pays.
It's 100 hours a week. You get paid 5 hours a week.
Exactly.
Well,
everybody is.
Thank you.
out. Well, if you want to give us a trust fund with $16 million, then we can reduce the bond.
Right, so, you know, but anyway.
I don't feel comfortable about them all the time either, so.
You know, so I don't know.
Trust and verify, shall we say?
Right, I just get this weird.
So, no, I mean, well, what we approved last night, you can't build that residential residential to the bonds. That was part of it. So he's got incentive to bond this thing. Not
right.
Just what we did last night.
Well, I just want to let you know, but, you know, what I'm telling our staff.
Oh, you should hold the line on this.
Thanks.
Thank you.